On the line, I have a speaker, an author, and an advisor to Fortune 100 and 500 company. His name is Mushambi Mutuma. And in my hand, I have a book called The Adaptability Code, Recoding the DNA of Future Ready Leadership. Mushambi, thank you for talking to me today on Chai FM.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Give me a bit of perspective. I haven't read the book. I don't know you. Who are you? How did you land up writing this book?
No, it's great. So I have been a tech entrepreneur for probably the last 15 plus years, and evolved from entrepreneurship and running a digital studio into being essentially an innovation advisor. And over the years, written a few books and spoken on a couple of stages as a keynote speaker. But essentially, yes, go ahead.
No, it just kind of perplexes me. How come you have, I wasn't expecting an American accent, I've got to tell you. With your name, I was expecting one of us.
Yeah, it's a good question. So the twang comes from 17 years living in the U.S.
So you are one of us.
I spent some time there. I am one of us.
Okay.
One of you.
Okay.
And have been back home now 18 years. But can't shake the twang.
make you very popular.
It worked. But yeah, so the book essentially is called The Adaptability Code. And really the premise behind me writing this book was thinking of innovation, thinking of disruption, thinking of where technology is today. It's moving at light speed. And a lot of people think and believe that AI is essentially the answer. And the basic premise of the book is that AI technology is not enough to be future fit and future relevant. What we have to be able to do is continuously evolve, adjust, and adapt to the circumstances around us. And the book is really about adaptability and informing this ability for us to kind of rewrite our DNA, constantly shift and evolve in order to face the coming disruptions.
You know, I listen to you and my stomach almost seizes in fear. You are so brave to have written a book. No, it's kind of ironic because you've written a book about adaptability, and clearly my discomfort with it comes with my reluctance to adapt. I think in the past, there have been technologies that I've managed to understand. There have been technologies where I understood more or less where they would take us. I do not have a cotton clue how this AI thing is going to land up. And that's the scary part for me. So you talk about...
No, and you're spot on, hey, because I write about it in the book, and I write about that resistance to change and the resistance to kind of what's coming, because that fear is very real, right? And it's very hard for me to convince you in your fear that you should start using AI. And that's why we kind of have to break down the principles of adaptability to make that change easier to swallow. Because if I just come to your offices today and say, use AI, you're going to say, of course not. Why would I do that? Robots are taking over. The machines are too much.
Yep.
But if we ingrain this new DNA and this new muscle that you build over time of understanding foresight and looking ahead, explaining curiosity, building up resilience to change and disruption, and understanding these basic kind of traits of adaptability, over time, it's then easier to think about the second level, which is after my personal growth and my adaptability, then I can start thinking about tech and what to onboard essentially.
Mushambi, you've already progressed to, you know, living with this. I'm wondering, you know, how you educate kids. That's what I'm just wondering. All these things you're speaking about, how do you teach these kinds of skills? What are schools going to be teaching in the next 2 years?
Yeah, this is a great example, right? Is because probably 10 years ago, if you'll remember, we were telling every kid to learn how to code, right?
Correct. Exactly.
And now it might be learn how to prompt. But really, the things that we need to be teaching kids and, you know, some of our older peers as well and colleagues is – curiosity, right? Is that how do you learn how to play with things? How do you learn? It's just by testing it out and letting your kids play with it. I mean, I've got a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we let them play with the tools within reason and with some guardrails, but we let them play with it and ask a couple of questions. And my son will run into my office and say, "Can I speak to chat for a bit?" And we let him do that. And it's funny because you see their evolution more and more, and they start asking smarter questions, and they start exploring and seeing, oh, wow, it can also do this. And that's how we build up that, I guess, that evolution over time. Because the main thing about AI is it's already here. It's not waiting for us. It's not asking our permission. 100%. It's a tool that already exists. So we have to start playing with it. We have to start exploring with it more than we have to. Otherwise, we run the risk of getting left behind.
There's so many directions I want to go with you. I've just got to pick one. I know there's, a thousand trillion questions come to mind, but
for
just
sure.
Something just personally, and this really happened to me very, very, very recently, and it was mind-blowing to me. I went away on a weekend very recently with a whole lot of similar-aged people with young kids. I don't have kids, so I don't understand young kids. I don't know what they do, what they think, what they want to do, absolutely nothing. All these kids, and they were good kids, don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking them for 1 second. They all had iPads, and the only discussion that I heard between the parents and the children was negotiation over screen time. I mean, there we were out in the wild with real elephants and real lions, and the kids wanted screen time. I thought, what are we doing to ourselves as a species, and where does this end?
Yeah, no, it's a real risk. And I mean, we have the same challenges. And even though I'm a techie at heart and love devices and technology, our kids actually don't have any tablets right now as it stands. They have some screen time on a family computer at home.
Yeah.
And it's about understanding that these are meant to be tools, not where we're supposed to transition our entire lives. And you see it the same when you go on a date night with your wife and the table next to you is also just glued to their phones, right? The couple next to you.
100%.
So it transcends beyond children. But I think 100%. It's understanding that technology in our lives is a tool that's supposed to make our lives easier, better, faster, different, not something where we stay lived in and tapped in forever. And it's a hard thing, especially amongst kids. But I think that's how we have to have the shifted relationship.
I did say to you there are a thousand directions my brain is going in while I'm talking to you. That was the one that was the kid. The next one is, you know, somebody showed me a really interesting list of what the top 20 companies were only 10 years ago. And there were still manufacturing companies, and there were still motor cars, and there were still banks. And today, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find anything remotely related to industrial anything because our economy's exactly changed. And do you foresee, in talking about adaptability, and do you foresee a very different list from the current one in a very short time?
Yeah, I think that the reality is because of technology, businesses are going to be scaling faster than ever. Every business on the Fortune 500 right now is essentially a technology business. They might be in different
100%.
Sectors. You know, even Nike is considered a technology business first and foremost before it's a sportswear and footwear business, which is incredible.
You've got to be kidding me.
That's how they identify themselves. They identify themselves as providers of the technology that helps people become better athletes. And that's how they develop the products and so forth. So it's a twist, right? And their use of data, particularly for athletics, and not just some of us who are buying it for the nice, cool shoes, right? But I think that you're spot on is that more and more companies are going to be shifting to be tech-led. And I think companies are going to grow faster and be much smaller. I mean, a recent conversation with a few billionaires, the likes of Sam Altman and Zuckerberg, they were talking about the bet that they're making of the next company that's a one-person company, but that's worth $1 billion, right? And with technology, with AI, that's a real possibility. Whereas 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 100 years ago, that would have, of course, been impossible. And so you're going to see more leapfrogging in growth by very tiny teams just because of the exponential power of the technology that exists and what it enables you to do. So I would argue that it presents a massive opportunity in the best time literally in human history to be an entrepreneur, because the tools that you have, what you can dream up, what you can code essentially for free, whether it's an application, a website, a product, that exists now like it never has before. So it's an exponential opportunity.
Absolutely scary. scary and fascinating all at once. Yes. And there I am thinking, you know, you're an advisor. You get called in to huge companies to advise. What do you tell the guys? What do you tell the CEO? What does he need to do to survive?
Yeah. So the main thing that I often lead with is, what got you here, no matter 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, is not what's going to get you there, right? Yeah. You can't rely on your past success, your past strategies. You have to evolve now more than ever to the tools, to the new ways of thinking, to the new ways of leading your employees. So it's like, we can't just rely on our strategy from last FY or last quarter. We have to be constantly adapting and evolving our thinking. You take some of the good of the past and then you ingrain it with some of the skills of the future, meet those two things in the middle, and that's how we survive tomorrow. But if you continue the same way of doing business, no matter what sector you're in, it's proven that you will get left behind, right? Yeah. And warp speed. So that's the main thing that we do. And then we try to teach them, what are these tangible tools that you can do on an individual basis, as well as a leadership basis and an organization basis, to embed adaptability. And that's the journey.
Shimi, I want to go back to your book, Adaptability. Yes. Firstly, thank you for providing us with the 4 copies to give away. We're going to do that a little later afternoon. But just bringing it back to your book, what role does failure play in building adaptability? And is there a way of reframing failure more positively?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think one of the traits of adaptability is resilience, right? And I love what you say, is that failure is incredibly important. If you're expecting success and growth without failures along the way, you're not going to go very far, because you can't separate those two things. And failure is not this thing of, I got knocked down, or I got a bad grade, or I lost some money, and then I'm down forever. Failure in that sense is a limited view. The opportunity of failure is, I learned, I tested, and I've got some new learnings to take with me going forward. And what can I use them with very rapidly and quickly? And so failures, I always kind of tease people, is that, like, I eat failure like I eat biltong. Like, have you ever had, like, just one little bit of biltong?
Impossible.
No, you got to keep going back handfuls, right?
Exactly.
And so you got to view failure the same way. Is like, yeah, man, it's an opportunity to kind of learn more, keep going back for more. And each failure, yes, it stings. Yes, it hurts. Yes, it's painful. But the opportunities that grow out of it, and where you can lean on and leverage on over time, and gray hairs and stress, is exponential. And I think that's why I love it. That's why I eat it like biltong, or eat it like jelly beans, is that there's so much more opportunity for you to kind of keep going based on what you've learned, versus the old stance of failure is this once-off thing and I got to stay down, right?
I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Final question for you this afternoon. If there's one key takeaway that you hope readers of your book will carry with them after having read it, what would it be?
You know, the biggest thing for me is that adaptability is no longer a choice, right?
Yeah.
It's the only way that you're going to survive tomorrow, 5 years, 10 years from now, no matter where AI goes, no matter where tech goes, no matter where our economy goes. So if we don't recode ourselves now, the risk is high. And so I really hope that the message that people get and the tangible examples that we put in the book can teach people how to get a little bit more comfortable with change, less resistant, and see the opportunity that presents itself to getting on board to where things are going.
Sounds simple, doesn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. Then let's go get a copy.
Well, thank you again for gifting us with 4. We're going to give them away in just a moment. But Mushambi Mutuma, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. A little bit scary, but an absolute pleasure nevertheless.
Thank you so much for the time and the platform. Good luck.
So as I said, we've been gifted with 4 copies of The Adaptability Code by Mushambi Mutuma. I personally found him absolutely scintillating and really interesting. We have 4 copies of this book to give away. We're going to ask you a question, and the first 4 correct answers get a book. So according to Mushambi, which is the one skill that matters most for thriving in times of change? Four books to give away. Let me know on the studio line 0861-895-1019. The question again for one copy of the four books is, according to Mushambi Mutuma, which is the one skill that matters most for thriving in times of change? The studio line 0861-895-1019.